Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone out there in the internet stratosphere. Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown, my obsession. Once again, I am your faithful loudmouth host, Matt Koplik. Matt Koplik. With me today is a wonderful gentleman. You know him from his web series via BroadwayWorld.com, That Abusive Boyfriend That We Love. It's the day of the show, y'all. Please welcome Mr. Spencer Glass. Hello, Spence.
Hi, Matt. That was absolutely hysterical.
Thank you.
Absolutely hysterical.
I actually didn't even make the connection at first when I reached out to you about this, but when I sent you the email of, like, you know, previous obsessions, Melanie Brooke had done Broadway World, and I was like, ooh, this might be the first time we have someone who's connected to a previous obsession. Like,
I was stalking your Instagram page because I was trying to find my own obsession, which I know we'll get to later, but I saw that was her obsession and I grew up with Melanie. So it was like double spectacular to see that.
In fact, this pod was mentioned once on a Broadway World thread because someone found the episode and discussed it. And it was mostly positive. One person said that I said and like too much, which is fair, but also that person can suck a dick.
Well, I also feel like you made it in a way. Like your Broadway podcast was discussed on a leading Broadway platform's message board. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing missing was that I needed someone to say that I was overrated and for someone to say that I wasn't rated highly enough. You know, the way that people do. About certain
You're overrated and you're not rated highly enough. How's that?
Exactly. That's how I want to be. I want someone to start a thread saying, is it just me or is Matt Koplik overrated? And have like three gays go, oh my God, finally someone said it. And then have a bunch of wonderful 19-year-old girls from the Midwest go, how dare you? He's iconic. He's everything. I just want a turf war online over me, Spencer. Is that so much to ask?
I've been looking for a turf war over you for decades, so I feel you.
That was the best backhanded compliment, because you just admitted that I've been alive for decades.
I did. Don't worry, folks. He's only 20.
I'm a baby. No. Yeah, I just celebrated my 30th birthday 9 months ago. I chose to ignore that it was really 30, as it was quarantine had just started, and I was like, I'm not actually going to be 30 until I can celebrate with at least four people in a room with me. So 30s, I'm 29 still, and I will remain 29 until I can have like four people in a room with me eating cake. But enough about me. To quote the great Beth Level, it's not about me. Let's focus on Spencer for a quick second before we get into his main obsession today. Spencer, you are probably most known currently to people online with your show with Broadway World, It's the Day of the Show, y'all, which is an obvious reference to the great Parker Posey in Waiting for Guffman.
Of course.
And it's a series where you discuss usually a lesser known musical.
Okay, yes. The point of the show is discuss lesser known musicals, hidden gems. I've always been very drawn to, very intrigued by shows that have been on Broadway for one day to 60 days to 7 years, and then you never hear about them again.
Right.
So I try, you know, when I was in pre-COVID, when I was in the studio and I had a band and I had a film crew, I really stuck to that. And then I had to adjust everything, and I do a weekly live now. So it's not like I'm like, it's not that I'm starting to like run out of shows that people don't know, but like 2 weeks ago I did Big Fish, and like four people on my live were commenting, this isn't lesser known. And I'm like, I know,
but like,
I know
it isn't. I actually would argue Big Fish is a little lesser known, because like, yes, it has its fans, but like how many people can really say they know that show well in the way that we say we know West Side Story, you know?
And that is exactly kind of where I'm going now with it. I will do shows like Big Fish. I'll even do a show like Carnival, where like,
saw that. I was so happy you did Carnival. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. Because only people like us know Carnival, but you probably have heard of it, but are you thinking it's Carousel? So I'm kind of getting into like that world now.
Yeah. And you're somebody who knows your shit about a lot of things. You don't just like settle on post 1985. You like going further into the canon, which I appreciate because I feel like not many people do anymore. And I understand not having theater be your whole world, having other hobbies. Listen, I do puzzles, so like theater is not my whole world. But sorry, that was my attempt at being like, I've changed my look. Look at the hat I'm wearing. You know, like
you're just so versatile.
Oh, honey, you're the first person to say that. it's that equivalent of, you know, making the nerdy girl the hot girl in a movie, and all they do is take off the glasses, take out the ponytail. I'm like, see, I have other interests. I do puzzles. But on the other end, I don't understand how you can do something for a living and not have something that's creative like this, that's not, you know, data entry, and not have some interest in it.
You know, I fully agree with you. I don't think it's mandatory. It does drive me a little nuts. Mm-hmm. I also think you and I are very lucky. You know, I'm also from New York. I grew up with theater-loving parents who took me to everything. Mm-hmm. And I could have every cast album, every, why can't I think of, what do you call it when you play the piano and you read the notes? Sheet music. I really need help. I had every sheet music possible. I think it, you know, being from New York, it's just there. Mm-hmm. But I fully agree with you. And that's kind of why I started Day of the Show, because I really felt like the foundation of our art form was truly hiding. You know, mm-hmm. I don't need you to know Miss Liberty. No one has to know the musical Miss Liberty, but like you have to know where musical comedy started from. Musical comedy didn't start from The Prom. It just didn't. And The Prom is one of my favorite musicals, funny enough, because I usually tend to go for more like the traditional stuff. But I'm like, it boggles my mind that people now know musicals because it's revived. So I started this because I need people to get on the bandwagon, Matt.
Absolutely. It's the bandwagon, another classic. I'm sorry, you were making this really wonderful point, but you just had the misfortune of throwing out Miss Liberty as your reference, and that's all I focused on. That's, and if y'all don't know, at least of Miss Liberty, like what that even is, educate yourself, because I'm not going to.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. Mm-hmm. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
Let's get into it. Spencer is here today because he has an obsession, and buckle in, kids, because it's a big obsession that's going to take up some time, recovering a lot of ground, and we will most definitely get off topic, probably, definitely. So, you know, strap in. Spencer, what is our obsession today?
The obsession today that Spencer Glass has and will always have is Broadway in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Any show, any theater, any cast album, any Tony Award performance, Thanksgiving Day Parade, I'm obsessed.
Why is that?
The business has changed. Some for great, for social justice reasons. I'm so happy about that. For the right reasons, this business has changed. But there's a glimmer of magic that the 90s had in New York City. The range of musicals that the 90s had. And, you know, to get vulnerable, I was a version of myself in the 90s growing up in New York and getting to see the musicals that I miss. And so there's a lot of nostalgia regarding 90s Broadway. And I think that's kind of why I'm obsessed. And I think, similar to like, you never get over your trauma from when like you're younger, it's always seeping in your body. I just will never get over 90s Broadway. Like, it was my life. I had every album. I memorized every lyric. I went to every stage door. Like, it's just in me. Like, I remember that more than the Hadestown album, you know?
Yeah, no, I absolutely hear you. We're going into the 90s. We're specifically going to pinpoint a couple of moments, shows and moments. Spencer, why don't you take the floor with the first one, starting off in 1991.
Yeah, so Will Rogers Follies, that was the year I was born. I did not see it live on Broadway, but I would listen to Big Time over and over and over and over again when I was younger, which then took me to Wellington, North Carolina, where I saw it at a community theater with my family. Don't ask. We don't know anybody involved. Just don't ask. But we saw it in North Carolina. And then I discovered some country in Asia broadcasted it. Like, I guess they somehow
Japan.
Got like the... Okay, it was Japan.
Yeah.
They got... I mean, really good bootleg, something. I guess they just had, like, it was like
it was a professional broadcast for Japan.
Yes.
This is where I prove my worth for you, Spencer.
No, thank you. I need your help. And also, I'm probably going to say incorrect things, so please just be like, that's not right, because it gets a little fuzzy.
Baby girl, don't worry. I will absolutely do all of that.
Thanks, baby girl.
I have no choice. It's in my DNA.
Will Rogers Follies was like, that was something that once I got a handle of that bootleg of the professionally filmed production, I could do all the choreo of the 12-minute opening number. I am obsessed with, like, Katie Huffman rising out from the basement onto the stage in the beginning. I think it's just like a crackerjack of a musical, and they don't write them like they just don't write them like that anymore.
They don't produce them like that anymore.
No.
So I actually watched some of that broadcast last night in preparation for today.
Oh.
And I mean, Tommy Toon, I'm devastated that he stopped choreographing and directing after Best Little Whorehouse Goes Public, because like the productions I would have loved to have seen him come up with. I am not as big a fan of Will Rogers Follies as a show as you are. I think the score is a lot of fun. The book scenes go on for a little bit longer than I would like, but that original,
absolutely.
Yeah, that original Broadway production, when you watch it, and you can watch it, it's readily available. You will marvel at the spectacle of it. And it's not like overwhelming spectacle. It's not like garish. It's very tasteful. It's very clever. And then on top of that, Tommy Toon, who has never been a choreographer who does like Rob Ashford gymnastic choreography, it's more about precision and ways to surprise you. So like Our Favorite Son, which is one of my favorite choreographed numbers of all time, the majority of that number is Keith Carradine and the bevy of chorus girls sitting on a step doing hand movement, handography, with little tambourines on their heads. And it is fan-fucking-tastic.
There's something to like tie into like the 90s and what you were saying about like the set and like the spectacle of it all. If any of you have seen the Kathy Rigby Peter Pan, it's very much like that. It's just colorful and in your face and aesthetically pleasing. And I love that when I go to a theater. I love the technicolor aspect of it all.
You know what's interesting? So the 90s, I was going to say something that was like, very soon. It was like, well, the 90s came after the 80s. For anyone who doesn't know, the 90s came after the 80s. But the 80s was a decade of, cocaine-fueled opulence. You know, you own everything. And the British mega musicals with, the tire going over the audience and the barricade on the turntable and this falling chandelier. And I've said it before with Smile, Smile's biggest downfall on Broadway was that they were trying so hard to compete with all of that. They turned what was actually a medium-sized musical into a big musical, and it needed to tone down, not scale up. So the 90s was almost like kind of a response to that. We're like, we're going to keep the Broadway opulence, but we're going to be a little less crazy about it and a little more intelligent about it. So like, you know, it's all of that glamour and colorfulness, but it's not like, whoa, it's not drug infused. It's a little more methodical and paced out. And also, you know, the 90s was the birth of the Broadway revival that we know it today, actually starting with Carousel, where, you know, we took these classic golden age musicals and we treated them like modern day musicals. And now, which then birthed the dark revival, but, you know, going in and out, but you have it on two hands. You have the opulence and you have the digging deep of the text, and which leads mm-hmm. to a very wonderful decade of musical theater. And also amen. A lot of high belting. Yeah, amen. Also a lot of high belting.
Wow, that was a great, I actually just learned a couple of things, so thank you. And so much high belting. Oh. Yeah.
Well, I mean, is it really learning if I just made it up? Like, that wasn't something that I'm like, here's a bit of research I found. It's more like my conclusion after like thinking about it for a while in the shower.
I like your shower conclusion, so. Haven't
heard that for the first time today. It also wasn't the best way to do a punchline. Wow, Spencer, you're not the first one to tell me that. There we go. See, that's what we call rewriting. That's why you go out of town, bitches. So, well, Rogers Follies. Tell us more about it. What's the show about? Who's a part of it besides Tommy Toon and Katie Huffman? What are other things people can look out for? What else are we obsessed with?
Yeah, Will Rogers Follies is about... what the fuck is Will Rogers Follies about? Will Rogers Follies is basically like the life of Will Rogers.
I mean, yeah, basically that is what it's supposed to be about. Is it though?
It's like a show within a show. You have like, you have, what's his face, Ziegfeld. There's like a Warren voiceover Ziegfeld, yeah. of him. Yeah, and he's like narrating the show, and he's narrating Will through his life, and like how Will got into vaudeville, and he like started as a cowboy acts, and then he met his wife, and then he had kids. You know, it's like a very bubblegum autobiography musical. Was that kind of right?
Yeah, I just thought of this now. It's like if the concept musical were a piece of bubblegum, you know, like. Yeah. It's like a cabaret yes. or like, because we think of the concept musical, we think Cabaret, Follies, Company, you know, Nine. And then we have Will Rogers Follies, where I'm like, it's also kind of a concept musical, because like there's kind of a plot, but not really. And it's almost not even about the plot. It's more about how the plot is shown.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very theatrical. And it's a concept. And it's the concept musical in the form of a piece of chewing gum. That's how I would describe it.
And it's just a good old showgirl musical. And I love showgirls. I am very attracted to, you know, I guess the high bottom, but also just these amazing dancers who are working their ass off, who never leave the stage, and the costume changes, mm-hmm. and they're doing a million things. And then you have Keith Carradine and Dee Hody just like running around at the same time.
Also, so when I was rewatching it, there's a moment where Dee Hody has to do a scene with like seven of the chorus girls where they're, you know, her sisters or whatever. And so for anyone who's unaware of what the Ziegfeld Follies were, they were essentially reviews, big budget reviews with like big star acts like Fanny Brice and Will Rogers. And they would have like also novelty acts. So Will Rogers Follies tries to emulate that and has small acts in between scenes sometimes. So like Will does a rope thing. And then at one point, like a guy has a thing with this little dog doing tricks. But the scene after that dog, Dee Hody comes out to do her scene, and the dog runs out on stage onto the passerelle around the orchestra into the audience and up the aisle. And I'm pretty sure it's not actually part of the show because Dee Hody breaks. She fully, like, she can't continue with the scene. She starts laughing. The chorus girls start laughing. And she, like, it's a full 30 seconds until she can continue the scene.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back and watch that. I have missed that. And I just like tying into what you just said and like the showgirl musicals and like giant stars with these amazing showgirls running around. That's also why I love Crazy for You, which was like a year later.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure in like, it was either like the Tony Award, it's the Tony Award performance. They also, something like that happens and one of the showgirls messes up and everyone starts laughing and like, they just like keep going. And
yes,
I noticed that. I didn't notice. Well,
I think it's with Slap That Bass. Something happens with the rope. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I love it when things go wrong on Tony performances, but they're such troopers and they go ahead with it anyway.
Can I just say, you probably know this, but I actually found this out only a couple of months ago. Do we know that Beth Lovell was Jodie Benson's understudy in Crazy for You?
I didn't know she was her understudy. I knew that she was kind of the second-ish female lead. Not really second female lead, but I knew she was in the show.
She was Tess, which is like a 45-line ensemble member, which is,
yeah.
I mean, a good cameo.
The leader of the ensemble. Yeah. Tess is the leader of the ensemble, for sure.
Yes, but she's like dancing. Like, it's so exciting to watch her. She's so good.
Yeah, I knew that she got her start as a tapper because she made her Broadway debut in 42nd Street, replacing, and then went on tour, like did it for 4 or 5 years, and then came back with Crazy for You, and then she replaced in Showboat, and then she did, I actually saw her as Dorothy Brock in 42nd Street because she was Christine Ebersole's standby, and I saw in the last week of previews, and Christine Ebersole was out the matinee that I saw, but I saw Beth Lovell.
I can't even imagine how incredible she was in that role.
Oh, she was great. I mean, I also loved that revival. But, I mean, that's because I was 11 and had just, you know, again, bevy of chorus girls, leading lady, front and center, colorful costumes, tap dancing up the wazoo.
They don't do it anymore, Matt. Hello, Dolly.
Except Hello, Dolly, every couple of years. We were apparently going to maybe get MAME with Toni Collette and... I will murder 1,000 geese to make sure we get that. So, shall we move on from Will Rogers Follies into our first Tony forms? Great. So we're going to go from the light to the dark and go into the Tony performance of the 1993 musical Kiss of the Spider Woman. I'm so happy you picked this for a multitude of reasons. Let's start with you. What is Kiss of the Spider Woman about? And then what was your introduction to it?
So it's about a window dresser. Hold on.
Yeah.
It's about... No, I'm right, right?
No, yeah, he's a window dresser.
Yeah, so it's about a window dresser. Yes, Molina, he's gay, and he goes to prison for child molestation. And he, or rumored. Unclear?
We can get into that in a second. It's not my favorite thing about the story. He's a gay Argentinian, and I think it's during the Dirty War, which... If you don't know about it, look it up. It's a huge genocide that happened in Argentina from the late 70s to the early 80s. And he was arrested for having sex with a minor. And you find out later he didn't know that the man was a minor. He thought that he was of age. And he said, no, you know, it's hard enough to like find love in, you know, basically as a gay man in the 80s in Argentina, already hard to find love. And on top of that, he doesn't feel attractive himself. So the fact that someone who he thought was so beautiful wanted him, he didn't even stop to question it. He just did it. And then found out afterwards that the person in question was like 16.
Thank you. That's actually exactly what it is. And yeah, I mean, listen, also about the 90s, it was like a little homophobic. Like they were like supportive, but it's like a little homophobic.
Yeah. It's like, you know, we have Love, Valor, Compassion. We have Angels in America, but you know, also, as much as Angels in America is my favorite play, it's like basically we have gay characters. They're either super damaged or they're super over the top flamboyant. Like when The Birdcage is probably the calmest representation of homosexuality in the 90s, that tells you where homosexuality was in pop culture.
100%. But speaking of, like, quote unquote, normal gay men, his like cellmate is this sexy, grounded, angry man. Mm-hmm. And while they end up having a love story of their own, Melina also imagines the Spider-Woman, Aurora. And he has like a fascination with movies and like the cinema and this amazing leading lady of his life pops into the jail, and there's like amazing dance numbers. Yeah. And
I mean,
flowers and birds. And
I mean, I know we were joking, but a gay who escapes his day-to-day horrors by reveling in movies that he loves starring a diva that he worships, that's very accurate depiction of gay life.
Just 100 million percent. The case of the Spider-Woman Tony performance. It's like a three-act show in 4.5 minutes, I think.
Oh my god.
You know, brilliant. I love like during the Tony Awards where they have the spoken dialogue and it's kind of like rewritten in a way, and then it goes into the musical number. Mm-hmm. It is just such a perfect Tony Award performance. You know, we start with them in their cell, and he's explaining how it's awful to be in prison, and then also explaining who Aurora is, and then all of a sudden he starts singing, and then a spotlight comes onto Chita Rivera smoking a cigarette, and then she throws it on the floor, she stomps on it, and then she starts singing Where You Are. And it's this amazing number about having an imagination and how you can be your worst nightmare or you can be your own best friend. And there is dancing, there is canes, there are hats. Uh-huh. She's flown in the air. It's just, everybody is so showcased. It's such an ensemble piece. I am obsessed.
They're bringing a prisoner back from interrogation. They're going to make us look at him to frighten us.
Well, I look, but I don't see. Deaf, dumb, and blind. You take my advice, Mr. Revolutionary.
When you feel you've gone to hell in a handbasket, and the world in which you dwell's no paradise,
I've some counsel I can give. You need but ask it. I'm so very glad to share this good advice. You've got to learn how not to be where you are.
It's sort of like the Where You Are is the musical theater equivalent of Kimmy Schmidt's I'm Not Really Here. I'm Not Really Here. There are things about it that on paper make it sound like it could be Springtime for Hitler, but it works because of context and how it's presented. So like, as you said, the whole thing is about taking yourself out of the reality. You can either like choose to live however you need to, or you can, you know, only look at the ugly and let it give you trauma. And you see Cheetah in this gorgeous white pantsuit dancing in what's obviously a musical number from her movie, and then eventually infecting the rest of the prison with said musical theater-iness. So like, I don't know if you notice this, there's a moment where a prisoner is being escorted across the stage by two guards with a bat over his head, and then they whip off the bag and he's got a top hat on and dances with her. And again, on paper you're like, that sounds gross, but the way it works is beautiful.
I feel like if anybody was like, we're going to revive this show, this is who people would be like, oh, I want to see blah, 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 is it? I want to see Karen do it. I want to see Karen do it. And I think
Karen
she
Oliva?
Would be, yes, I think that she would be explosive.
Yeah. No, I think she'd do a great job.
But I also heard it was coming back with Audra McDonald.
Which also I'm not mad at. Audra, so it's more about that role. Aurora is interesting because it's a star role that you can tailor for whatever star you have. So like, when Vanessa Williams replaced, Vanessa Williams was more of a singer than a dancer. So I think they like toned down some of the choreography and they upped the keys because Chita Rivera famously, after Chicago, her voice dropped 3 octaves.
Right.
So she went from being able to belt a D and all that jazz to like, I can't go past a B.
Right.
To like every tenor being like, give me the Chita Rivera catalog, I'll sing it all. So they tailored it to Vanessa. So they would have to tailor it for Audra. And Audra can truly do everything. But no, I think Karen would be lovely. It would require her to maybe be a little less Meisner technique. She would have to be a little more austere, which she's not used to. I don't mean that as a read, because one of the things I actually love about Karen Olivo is there's always a little bit of messiness to her performing. And I've gone on record to say that that's shit that I love. I find that a lot of performers now are a little too clean in their presentation, and I do not respond to it as well. Karen Olivo is not afraid to like not be precise in how she stands or how she moves her body in a scene or in a solo number. Obviously, like, she's given choreo, she'll do it how you want her to do it. But if it's like, oh, I'm supposed to like have emotions in this number, I'm not gonna bevel for you. But as Aurora, she kind of has to. Aurora lives in a bevel. Also, I should say, I was telling Spencer when we were setting this up, and I told this to all my guests, I try not to be a dick with my opinions, and then I say something and go, you're a dick, Matt, just live in it. Live in your feelings, live in your emotions.
Live in it, Matt, and I, as we all learned, if I don't want to respond to it, then I will sit there and I will smile at your beautiful face.
I know that was like funny, but that made me happy.
No, I was being genuine.
No, you weren't. How dare you?
Little does everybody know, I'm actually leaving my boyfriend for Matt right after this podcast.
Oh my God. Tell us once more how you have a boyfriend, Spencer, please.
Oh wait. Oh my God. Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, I'm
that's
joking.
Annoying. You're right.
I truly am the most single person I think anyone's ever met. I have dated, I've briefly had relationships, but never anything long-term. I think I'm destined to die alone, which is fine. My brain is a hotbed of activity. I entertain myself daily, but you know, I'm very aware I wake up each morning alone.
No, you're not gonna be a Vasca. Actually, this is the time where I'm gonna say that if you're afraid to approach Matt for a date, approach me, tell me, and I will be the Dolly Levi here, okay?
Fosca Done. And Dolly Levi both mentioned in 60 seconds. You might be my favorite guest ever.
Ugh.
Okay, so going from our deep dramatic scene, Chita Rivera kicking face with Prisoner's musical number, we go into something that's a little more on the opposite end of the spectrum, which is the 97 Tony performance from The Life.
Yeah, 97 was a big year for me. My family worked on Broadway for a while. They were in the marketing publicity world of Broadway. So and their first show was the 20th anniversary of Annie, starring Brittany Kissinger and Nell Carter. And
I know it
this
well.
This ties into what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And so 97 was just like a year I will never forget, because I felt very involved in the Broadway community in a way that I always wanted to, you know, be when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing The Life performance, and that was it. Like, actually, that may have trumped the 20th anniversary of Annie for me. It's, it is 6 powerful, talented, starry-eyed women stomping around the stage, uh-huh. Just like truly stomping around the stage, singing fantastic notes.
Maybe I'm a sinner, but who's gonna cast the first stone? It's my body and my body's nobody's business but my own.
Nobody's business but my own.
What
So there's just something electrifying about it, and I love the message. I feel like it was the start of feminism in a way. I feel like we had feminism and then it went away on Broadway and then it like came back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't participate in sex work, but I think that sex workers are awesome, and that's, you know, it's their body and that's what they want to do. And I'm totally all for that. I hate people when they judge, you know, that, yeah. Any kind of occupation. And I love that it was on a Tony Award stage and they're literally singing like, this is my body, my business. And if I want to fuck somebody for money, I'm going to.
And I don't need your judgment. And that's really, the judgment of sex workers comes from America's prudish view on sex in general.
Yep.
And we shouldn't judge sex workers. In fact, I was openly discussing with Spencer how I plan to subscribe to one or two OnlyFans accounts at some point this year, because people got to make money. And while, you know, we love a good Pornhub or MyVidster, we got to stop taking the money out of the mouths of these hardworking people and let them actually get a payday from it.
I love that. I love that.
Can I tell you something that I love about this performance of The Life? This is the kind of representation and diversity that I am for, because something that John and I have discussed in the past, and I think I might have even discussed this with Suddenly Seymour when she was on, my issue with Broadway and diversity, and it's getting better, but it's not there, is that Broadway has sort of heard diversity and gone, okay, so more, you know, Black actors. And it's like, no. First of all, there are other ethnicities, there, but also various ages, sizes, vocal types. You know, people don't all sing the same. People don't all look the same. And we shouldn't have to like have a size 12 as Lori in Oklahoma and everyone go, oh my God, hashtag so brave. Like there's so many different types of performer. And the theater community, Broadway specifically, has found a specific type of performer in the last 20 years that it has really enjoyed employing. The Life has 6 or 7 women of different ethnicities, different ages, different vocal types, and different sizes. None of them are interchangeable. And together, they are a strong unit like a goddamn army. Apart, they are individual divas in their own right. And that is the kind of diversity that I like will stomp my pussy for, you know?
you actually nailed it. That is so true. I mean, thank God for Cy Coleman. It's just to respond to that. That's absolutely true. And one of the biggest regrets of my entire life is I think I had the opportunity to go see The Life at Boston Conservatory. It happened like 1 or 2 years before I got there. And it was The Life starring Stephanie Uma.
Oh my God.
I mean, you just like rocked back in your chair because you know that was probably an unbelievable performance and casting. And sometimes vocal casting is not great. They nailed it with that one. And they also had they were going for like, they cast some of the women as men, which I thought was cool, you know, just to kind of like add that kind of flair into it. Anyway, the Life performance is amazing. My favorite moment of that is when they're shaking their tits, the two bigger women, and anything Lilias White does turns to gold.
Oh yeah, it's
for me.
Vocal pyrotechnics, and as you said, like stomping the stage. It's these women who just come on, and I think because the show had pretty recently opened and like it had been in development forever. Cy Coleman is, you know, a legend in the community. Lilias White had been in the Broadway community for so long and was like finally getting her moment. So the Radio City Music Hall is living for them. They just come on, they piss all over that stage, and I also really love that like they do it with such confidence and like fire, and then it's over and they're like, oh, what, you liked that? Oh, I guess. Like it's their energy afterwards is like, it's both of like a calm like thank you so much, and also a little like, oh my God, I just farted that out, I can't believe you liked that. It's like, girl.
Well, it was like the little engine that could, but like you have six show-stopping women on stage. Like, absolutely. Everyone's going to go absolutely wild for that.
Yeah. The live Tony performance is up there with me with the original Annie Tony performance of You're Never Fully Dressed Without a Smile, where it's just like a group of women, all equally different from each other, belting, dancing, and like an audience in the palm of their hand. It's just so good, which if anyone wants to watch that as well, OBC, it's a 10-minute medley, but the You're Never Fully Dressed Without a Smile, it's so amazing to see these like preteen girls just have like 1900 of like the most hardened industry insiders just eating it up with a damn spoon. It's great.
And I think that's like the misconception about the theater community sometimes. There is just, God, they can open their arms. Like they really can. And I think they really root for people that aren't totally rooted for, you know, and that's how I feel when I watch Caroline O'Connor in the Christmas Story 20-word performance. You can tell everyone's like, this is your moment and you've been waiting for this and we've been waiting for you, Caroline. Mm-hmm. And that's what it feels like when they applaud for the life, you know?
Exactly. Anyway. Yeah, no, it is definitely a hardened industry, but like when someone beloved gets a moment to shine and everyone in the theater knows it, you can feel the love.
Absolutely.
So our last two points, we'll go a little quicker on them. So a specific Broadway diva who we know and love today got her start in a revival of a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical in the 90s. And no, we're not talking of Audra Ann McDonald. We are talking about one Miss Laura Benanti. She made her Broadway debut at the ripe old age of 18, 17 in the ensemble. Yeah. So why are we discussing this, Spencer? Please tell me.
Well, Spencer was a monster when he was younger. You know, I'm the fourth child. I've heard every word in the book. My parents are fierce liberal Democrats from Long Island, and we had opinions. And I, again, Sound of Music was a musical that my family worked on. But I remember, you know, I would read the playbill ahead of time. I was really pissed that I wasn't in it. I was like, I just played Kurt at a community theater. Like, I wasn't in the Broadway production, and I'm mad.
Don't they know who I am?
Yeah, don't they know who I am? And as I'm reading the program, I just like remember seeing this girl named Laura. I saw her headshot. She was in the, you know, there's like the headshots and then you have to go like a million pages and then it's like the ensemble headshots. Mm-hmm. She was towards the top and I remember seeing her and I was like, well, she looks young. Why is she in the ensemble? And then I went to her bio and I realized she was like 17 years old. And I saw that she understudied Maria. And I turned to my mom and I was like, well, that's just pathetic that a 17-year-old is covering Maria. And I'm sure my mom was like,
that is pathetic.
Holy cow. And I just always remembered this girl. I was like, there was a girl understudying. She wasn't even Liesel. Like, she was understudying Maria. And then I remember when Into the Woods came out, I made the connection and I was like, oh my God, Laura Benanti was the Maria cover in the 1998 revival.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes, so Spencer just wanted to air out that dirty laundry, let all of you know that he judged her. I did not see her as Maria, but I do remember speaking of those like Port Authority pamphlets.
Yep.
Because when she took over for Rebecca Luker, it was like this whole big deal that she was the understudy who was going on. She was so much younger. She was, you know, the Broadway wunderkind. She also was coming in when Richard Chamberlain, who for you youngsters was a very famous film and TV actor, he was coming in to play Captain Von Trapp. So there was all this press about him and they made a whole new show pamphlet with him and she was on it. And I mean, I throw it out now, but I remember her on that pamphlet. I remember her in Maria's wedding dress with Richard Chamberlain. There's a photo of her doing the like arms over the head pose for Sound of Music.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. And there's some wonderful video of her in the role. Listen, on YouTube, Aurora Spider-Woman has video of her.
Oh, great. Okay, I'm going to go look at that. Thank you.
She's great. I mean, she's got all this youthful energy. If you ever read the book Nothing Like a Dame, which is a collection of interviews with Broadway ladies. Laura's in there and she talks about Sound of Music, and she was like, it was a wonderful experience. She goes, I learned a lot of lessons. One of the biggest lessons was like, never go on stage too confident, because after she took over, the press came back to review Richard Chamberlain, and I guess like the Times or Washington Post or somebody was like, you know, Laura Benanti is something, you know, something along the lines of like, effortless effervescence or something like that, like effortless joy. Mm-hmm. And she's like, and I walked out on stage the next day to like start the show, and I was like, I'm effortlessly joyful, and fully face planted the moment her first song start, like comes out to do the like Sound of Music face plants. And she was like, never go on stage too confident, guys. I went out being like, like the Times said this about me, and then bam.
My days in the...
Yep, exactly.
Great.
Mary Great. Martin was in her grave being like, that'll teach you, bitch.
That, yeah.
Respect your elders, Hal.
Yeah. I also just want to say, I did not get to see her. Like, I did get to see... No. Rebecca.
You Thank judged God. Laura Benanti's journey. You weren't really judging her because you had nothing really to judge.
I had nothing to judge. And now, I mean, I'm a humongous fan of, I mean, who isn't a fan of Laura Benanti? But I wish at the age that I saw Sound of Music, I wish that I realized who Jen Maxwell was. She just was so good on that show. And then sometimes I word vomit, and it comes from because... And I'm embarrassed by it, but I'm also like, this is who I am. I'll always kind of just be a little bit of like a stage door boy. Like I just, and not stage door manner, like stage door, no, actual
I
stage
am.
Doors.
Yeah, stage manner boy.
I know, I was always too afraid to go. And
rightfully
but
so.
I did a lab a couple of years ago of this really cool musical, actually, part of Ars Nova. And the guy next to me, his name is Dashiell, and I was like, I only know one Dashiell. And he was Rolf in the 98 revival of Sound of Music. And like during music rehearsal one day, I was like, I don't know how to like say this to you, but you're amazing in the Sound of Music as Rolf. But I'm like 27 telling him this.
Yeah.
And he was so nice, but I'm sure he was like, it's like, weren't you like 7? Like, how do you remember my performance? Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's also, I love that you think like that's word vomit. Like I truly word vomited to Judy Kuhn when I met her. It was not a cute look, but it's fine. So we're closing out the 90s with what sounds to me like a horror story.
Oh God, okay, yeah.
You saw Footloose, yeah. And the horrors didn't just stop there. I saw Footloose as well. I will say my memories of the show are a little iffy. I remember like a big blue box of a set, and I remember a lot of dancing. Some of those arrangements slap, but what is our story with Footloose, Spence Eyre?
Yeah, so I saw Footloose. I die for Footloose. I will always die for Footloose. I thought it was some of the best orchestrations. Like I just thought it was a really phenomenal production. However, I almost didn't make it. I had a fear growing up, and it stemmed from Dorothy's high-pitched screaming during the Twister in the Wizard of Oz movie. I had a fear of like loud sounds. Mm-hmm. I think I was getting over it, and when I saw Footloose, you know, it started, and it's very, very in your face. I remember it started, it was like flashing neon green and like purple lights, and then a man skates on his stomach on a skateboard across the stage. Mm-hmm. And I just got really nauseous. It was just all too much for me, and it was really scary for me. And I turned to my dad and I said, I'm gonna throw up. And my dad was like, you were fine. I was like, I'm not okay. I'm gonna throw up. My dad was like, okay. And he like ran me to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And I like fully dropped to the floor over the toilet, and I was fine. And my dad was like, are you vomiting? I was like, no, I'm actually good. He was like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, I'm sure. I actually feel better. I think I just needed to like see the toilet bowl and know that I was fine. It just was a lot for me. And he was like, okay. And then he walked me back into the theater. And you know, I got back into the theater just in time for, you're playing so cool, obeying every rule. Thank God.
Also, Spencer, because Spencer went to Boco, he knows vocal health. So he threw his hand in the air so he could place the note in a healthy way. Good on you. But
that's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, God. The vocals in that show are outstanding. And that, I mean, the arrangements for the opening number alone are fantastic. Yes, it's Footloose. And yes, in retrospect, I can look back on some of it and go like, yeah, no, I think if I were 25 years old seeing that show at the time, I would be a lot more snarky. I will say some things hold up and the arrangements of the opening number is one of them.
I mean, it's just spectacular. And when I first got a Facebook, I remember, maybe it was in MySpace, I remember I made sure I went back to my Playbill and I friended every member of that company. And I'm still friends with them on Facebook.
More innocent times when if you got a random friend request from a kid, you just took it.
You don't even want to know who I'm Facebook friends with. I'm Facebook friends with some like national treasures who at the time, I don't think understood Facebook and have not deleted me since.
That's the long con right there. You invested in the long game with that. That's lovely. So let's close out with some final thoughts on the 90s. When we reflect on them, what's our main takeaways? I mean, we kind of have said it already, but sort of in conclusion, like to wrap it up again.
Main takeaways: Brittany Kissinger taking over for Joanna in Annie. Mm-hmm. And Joanna's interview on CBS crying.
That role has a history of replacements.
Which I don't blame them for.
A lot of blood has been shed over the role of Annie. That's why that dress is so red.
90s. We didn't really talk about this, but and I know this is kind of veering off Broadway, but Jerry Lewis in Damn Yankees in London on the West End. I will never forget that performance. I was hysterically crying. My parents were like, did you understand the plot? And I was hysterically crying. I would say Will Rogers' Follies, absolutely. Jodie Benson being lifted on the piece of wood during I Got Rhythm. And I would say almost vomiting at Footloose. I feel like those are my highlights of the 90s.
Amazing. My highlights: the set design of the Secret Garden.
Oh, great.
George C. Wolfe finally coming to Broadway with Jelly's Last Jam and Angels in America. Mm. Tunnel of Love in Sideshow. Alice Ripley's I Want Mine. Where is mine?
Yes.
The entirety of the 94 Carousel, specifically the Carousel Waltz. The whole thing's on YouTube, guys. You're welcome. Big, how can I forget Big? Big the Musical, the teen chorus of Big the Musical. Oh my God. I know. We stan. We have no choice but to stan.
No choice.
The Tony performance of Your Good Man Charlie Brown, where I was introduced to Chenoweth. And this isn't Broadway, but the golden age of the ABC TV musical. So Cinderella, Annie.
Forget it.
It's just Break My Arm, Daddy, the whole thing.
Break My Arm, Daddy. That is one of the, that, you know what, I have to say, that and Cinderella.
It's the same music team, actually. Same music team for both Cinderella and Annie, because Rob Marshall choreographed Cinderella, then directed and choreographed Annie, and brought the same music team with him.
Right. And I have to say, fuck Disney Plus, because, or whatever that's called, because they don't have Cinderella on there.
I think because there's gotta be something going on with like Brandy and Whitney's like estates or something like that, because that's also the reason why we don't have a soundtrack. Something about that is probably not allowing us to have it on Disney Plus. I can't imagine any other reason.
Interesting. That's a good point. True.
Yeah, but we need to have, there needs to be some public outcry about it, because just get it the fuck on there. And also like Whitney's estate, get it together so we can have an official soundtrack. I mean, I have the music. I listen to a bootleg audio on my phone when I work out, but like, I want a real soundtrack. I want crystal clean sound.
I am completely with you. I mean, The Sweetest Sounds I will never get that out of my mind. Impossible, Stepsisters Lament. I mean, come on.
R.I.P. Natalie.
R.I.P. Natalie. And we miss you, Vianne.
Yeah. No, wonderful takeaways from the 90s. Spencer, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Spencer, where can people find you on social media?
I'm at Hi Spencer Glass on Instagram, as in like Hi Spencer Glass, H-I Spencer Glass. And I pretty much post everything you need to know about whatever I'm doing on there.
Okay. Are you on the Twits, on the TikToks?
I'm at It's Spencer Glass on Twitter.
Okay.
And then on TikTok, I don't know what I am on TikTok, but I'm on TikTok and I'm having fun. Just search Spencer Glass.
And OnlyFans is Spencer Ass, I'm assuming?
I unfortunately have not made it to OnlyFans yet, but I'm working my way up.
Yes, we're building that confidence. A few more viewings of the life and you'll get there.
And I'm there.
Yes, you can find me on Insta, Matt Koplik, the usual spelling. No other social medias. I don't have the energy. I'm too old, as we've discovered. Spencer, we close out every episode with a nice diva, theater related usually. Do you have one for us to close out with today?
Yes, I do. I'm going to close out with no other than Dee Hody.
Ah, ding dong. Love that. That's twofold. We have Footloose and we have Will Rogers Follies with that. So for anyone who wonders what kind of woman Dee Hody is, Dee Hody is the kind of woman that can be in The Best Little Whorehouse Goes Public and Footloose and be Tony nominated for both. You go, oh, you're in Footloose? How good for you. And Dee Hody's like, yeah, got a Tony nom for it, bitch. You're like, oh, I'm so sorry. You were in Best Little Whorehouse Goes Public. And she's like, got another Tony nom for it, bitch.
She's like, I'm also going to be a very strange role in Bright Star, and I'm going to make you cry. But then also, just so you guys know, I can also be a jazzy, like ferocious mama in City of Angels and make the tennis song something. She's everything. I'll stand by her forever.
Know what we were going to call her? Broadway MILF Dee Hody. I'm not even sure if she's a mom, but she's a Broadway MILF.
I feel like she would love that. Actually.
Oh, I'm sure she would.
Isn't she vice president of Equity? Am I making that up?
She ran. Like, I don't think she won.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I voted for her. I think Stephen Bogardis won. Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And they were in Bright Star together. I wonder if there was like a point of contention about that. Only one Bright Star actor can be vice president.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine? What if Carmen Cusack was our president? Was our Equity president?
I ran into her at a bar, and I went up to her. She was having a drink, and I was like, I know I shouldn't do this. And she was like, lay it on me, honey. And I was like, you were sensational in Bright Star, and I'm trying very hard to tell people in my community when they're good at things. And she was like, that means the world. Thank you so much for telling me that. Wow, you made my night. And I was like, probably I didn't make your night, but that was so nice.
I bet you anything you did. Here's what I have found out about the theater community. We all love a good compliment, and you never know where someone's at that day. For all you know, she was having the worst day ever. And someone out of the blue, some little queer, comes up to her and says, normally I have decorum, but my need to tell you this is overpowering my decorum, and I'm going to tell you. And that means something, you know? When people DM me and say, I just have to tell you, your Instagram stories are really annoying, I need you to stop. I'm like, you know what? That means so much to me. I drew such a wonderful reaction from you. I jest. No one DMs me. Anyway, so this is a long tangent. Anyway, so... You are Spencer Glass. I am Matt Koplik. This has been Broadway Breakdown. We're going to take it away with Broadway MILF Dee Hody. Take it away, Dee. Thank you guys so much for listening. Oh, before I forget, rate, review us, subscribe, all the things. They all add to the algorithm that helps the podcast get more noticed. And we'd love to get more noticed because I love being a little, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I like being a boutique podcast, but like I'll settle for, you know, a small chain. I'll take it. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. Thanks for listening. Takes away, D. Bye.
She was deftly deferential, or so they wrote on her wreath. No one ever glimpsed her potential, but when stripped down to the essential, mind you, this is confidential.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.